OP. And we're also welcoming the department led by the minister and the DG. And welcoming our support staff from Parliament and everyone that is in the meeting. This is the last meeting for the term. We have done very well in terms of at least managing our meetings as planned. But I think up front, one must apologize for this presentation in particular. I know members received it late. And the reason for that, members would recall in the first, the initial planning that we had, we were supposed to have a workshop in Johannesburg this week, but these things were normal. And because of everything just ran Dier Makar last week because of the meeting we were supposed to have with the province of the Eastern Cape and DPE. So we avoided not to have another meeting this week because we are trying that every Tuesday we must be able to use it effectively. So my apologies up front. I know that you probably did not have enough time to reflect and go through the presentation. I believe you would be able to accept apologies, honourable members. But we needed to use the slot so that we don't necessarily really have 2 weeks without having meetings. And if members would just take a few moments, let us please take a moment of silence for the King of AmaZulu, King Zwelithini, for just a few minutes. May his soul rest in peace. Thank you very much, members. Llewellyn, can you take us through the apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. For the Portfolio Committee, of course, I have Honourable Aduins, Honourable Tetla, Honourable van der Walt, Honourable Mashabela, and the apology I have is for Honourable Dr. Tembe Kwayo, who won't be able to join us. Honourable Sukers is starting at another meeting. She will join us a bit later, but then she has to leave again for a third meeting, Chair, so she will be in and out. Thank you. Oh, sorry, and I've also received apologies for Deputy Minister won't join us. I believe she is on visits to schools as we speak. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kaka?
Thank you, Chair. On the Select Committee side, I've got Honourable Christian, I've got Honourable Ndongeni, I've got Honourable Baha, I've got Honourable Lutuli, and I've got Honourable Maleka. Honourable Gillian will be joining us later. As I indicated earlier, she had another meeting to start to. I've got an apology from the Chairperson, Honourable Tabeleng. He won't be able to join us today due to an oversight visit with the Ad Hoc Committee on the Section 100 Intervention in the Northwest Province. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Those are the apologies, members. I take it that we accept them as received. On the agenda, for today we are dealing with the APP of the department and the threat plan. And then after that we would adopt three sets of minutes that are supposed to be adopted. Can I get a mover in the second for the adoption of the agenda?
Good morning, Chair. I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mwela. Any seconder?
I rise to second, Chairperson.
very much, Principal. Okay. So without really wasting any time, because we would be dealing with the plan of the department, which might take us very long for them to present. Can I hand over to you, Minister? I don't want to say political overview today.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Let me acknowledge you and the team. And again, thank you very much for the opportunity that you are giving us to come and present before you. And I'm not going to speak to the report because the security is a very long one that I've been through. But just to save you with around the report, Chair, what I think we'll agree with even members of the committee or of parliament is that because of the current situation we find ourselves of COVID-19, we find ourselves in a very difficult but also very exciting period. Difficult in the sense that we are derailed and for me, what is even more heartbreaking is the fact that we have to jump, skip days, we have to jump some schools. They have to reduce hours to have social distancing, and it's a real, real turn off. And both teachers and parents are complaining because it's really disrupting schooling. But we had agreed that it is important for us to balance safety measures and health, education and health, and that's our juggling around those two difficult concepts to link together. We've been very fortunate that since we reopened, we had very few incidents where we had disruptions of having to close schools because of infections. We still get reports of outbreaks. There was a reported in Pal where there was a threat of a breakout. But in general, we really have been very fortunate that in the past few days that we've been back to, or weeks that we've been back, we've just had very limited disruptions. It's possible that we're benefiting from the decline in the infection rate, but I think the sex... Yeah, because through virtual, there's also lots of productive work that we're able to do. There's no moving around. You can do a lot. I mean, if it was the old day, I was supposed to have been in Cape Town today, and which means the afternoon, which I can do some work. Today should have been Parliament all day. But because of the current situation, we're able to do more work as the sector. So because it's all exciting phenomena, but it's also very distressing. Worst is, I think, also when we present the budget, you also see that because of the economic environment we operate in, we've had all of us as departments make certain sacrifices. Others were really forced to do major sacrifices. We also, but as a sector, had to do our part to contribute towards the bigger picture of the country and the country. As you correctly say, it is a very important the portfolio committee for affording us this opportunity to engage with yourself, and I'm looking forward to very productive interactions, counsel, and also advice from members of parliament as to where they think we can improve. And yeah, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister of Basic Education, members both from the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee, as correctly indicated by the Chair and confirmed by the Minister, we're presenting the Annual Performance Plan for the year 2021-2022, as well as the strat plan that we align every year, 5-year strat plan. Chair, we really appreciate your flexibility that this matter was not on your program, but you placed it on your program, given the urgency and the need to deal with it now. So we really appreciate that. The presentation, as I indicated, mainly focuses on the two main documents, the APP and the Strat Plan, and it will also reflect on the financials. We also just highlighting some of the achievements, that progress in the achievements that we have made, like the National Senior Certificate, the placement of the Funza Lushaka Bazaars. We will also locate this within the State of the Nation address made recently by the President, but still aligning it to previous owners to make sure that nothing is left out. What characterizes this presentation is about modernizing our curriculum, reflecting on skills and competencies for a changing world. We also, for instance, looking at the function shift of the ECB. We have presented on this yesterday, Chair. So we'll reflect a little bit on that and the vision and the model that we are expected to put together when ECB will be coming over to basic education. We also looking at issues of strengthening accountability, but also standing very firm in terms of the international obligations, as well as the regional and the sector plan, Action Plan 2024 towards schooling 2030. And I'm going to request with this Nozipo Bonambi to take us through a very comprehensive presentation, as you said, Chair, but we'll do our best to try and run through it as quickly as we can. I'm going to ask Mrs. Nozipo to do that, then Mr. Kuno will just deal with the last part of the financials. I must also indicate that although it will reflect some growth in the allocation, we all know that the budget cuts have really created challenges around the purchasing power for the sector. I don't even want to talk about COVID-19 because we're funding COVID-19 from the education infrastructure grant, which means that we'll have less or virtually nothing to maintain and even to build schools in terms of infrastructure. And the challenges of the collapsing infrastructure continue to grow, which is a challenge I think you know already. And the fiscus is not doing well in the whole country. The whole of government, is not only basic education that is affected, but it really impacts profoundly in the delivery of our programs, in our ability to even meet targets. And I'm just raising it that the discussion must take that into account, that there are some of the programs that are adversely affected by the diminishing financial resources that we are getting, not only as a department, but also as a sector. Ms. Nozipo? Ms. Nozipo?
She seems to be having problems connecting. Can I assist?
Yes, please proceed, Carol. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we can go straight to slide 10 because I think Minister and DG have very succinctly dealt with the oversight of the sector. And I think in those slides before, those slides talk about the size and shape of the sector, the fact that we serve 12 million children, that the number of percentage of independent 45% in a state like that over the reflects on the NDP as DG has indicated, but also the minister indicated in terms of commitment to quality basic education. So slide 10 then just looks at and then also they've spoken about the impact of COVID-19 and how that has played itself out in the sector. Minister spoke very clearly about, on the one hand, the successes, but also on the other hand, the frustrations that we have in terms of making sure that attendance rates but also time lost on schooling is minimized. It is something that we are looking at this year as well, not just what we reflected on last year. So in the APP, we're really looking at slide 11, please. We're really looking at both the government-wide priorities, but also key deliverables, alignment with medium to long-term goals, and the strategic plan, as the DG mentioned. Next slide, please. We basically are looking at what the Department of Basic Education 222 Struthen Street intends to do in financial year, in terms of its legal and compliance obligations. And we are aware that in terms of the national department, it has monitoring and oversight, but also a whole lot of innovation around some of the key areas that need to happen to make the 2030 a reality. Next slide, please. So the next few slides just look at progress on selected deliverables. We look at the performance of the class of 2020, excluding progress learners and me. And the next slide, which looks at also, obviously, excluding progress learners, we are at 81.2%, but the net NSC performance over time looks like this. It could have been much worse without extensive interventions on the side of the department, but also working with provincial departments. The bachelor passes, in terms of the contribution of bachelor passes, province 2020 on slide 16 looks like this. I think that, and then similarly, then special needs learners by qualification type and the kind of NSNP program deliverables we had in quarter one to quarter three of 2020 to 2021. We then also on slide 19 then look at the filling of posts, and you can see the breakdown in relation to the filling of posts across the quarters in 2020-21, and then also Funza Lushaka placements as at the end of December 2020. Next slides, 21 and 22, look at the volume 1 and volume 2 workbook by province, and we know that the committee will be very interested in those areas. So slide 23 then looks at the priorities, which are those 7 priorities, and we are the third one. All equally important, especially in the light of what the DG said about the impact of the pandemic, not just nationally, but regionally and globally. We're looking at the 5 education sector NDSS, which is basically the NDP, but for our sector. Looking at school readiness of children and obviously early childhood, early grade, the foundations of schooling. We're looking at 10-year-old learners reading for meaning. We're looking at youth better prepared for further studies and the world of work, and that's DG spoke about in terms of the skills for a changing world. And contributing to a prosperous and equitable South Africa. We're also looking at resourcing physical infrastructure and equipment and environment that inspires learners to learn and teachers to teach in our schools. And looking really at the commitment, and those things have come out in the commitment in terms of the state of the nation, the president has announced over the last few years, particularly this year and the year before. We have on slide 27 a focus really on learning disruptions and having to gain lost time, to regain lost time, but also to improve educational outcomes from the early years through to post-school, through innovative and interventions, and also strengthen the things that we know we need to strengthen within the sector. Early learning, reading and numeracy, the migration of ECD is gaining momentum, the fourth industrial revolution, ICTs in education, competencies, and particularly the coding and robotics curriculum, and plan for ICT strategy implementation, find expression in the ACP. And then we look at inclusive education and learners with special needs and the support that we're giving them in through the sector. So that in Program 2 and Program 3, you will see a reflection of a lot of that work. In terms of the ECD function shift, we have administrative and political leadership in that area, and a lot progress has been made in terms of diagnostics, setting up the planning and reporting system. The actual administrative process relating to the function shifts, but also the development curriculum, funding, but also a strengthened quality assurance framework for early childhood development. Those things are things that we have, especially in the late 90s, within the schooling system, grappled with, and we are using those learnings as the migration happens for strengthening those ECD centers, so that we do focus on those early learning outcomes. We do focus on those state of the nation address concerns and priorities. And those things are really reflected in the action plan. Honourable members will be aware of the action plan. We've included two slides from slide 32 and 33 that look at the goals, 27 goals of what we want to do and how we intend to do that. To explain, if you like, how we plan to work through the sector to achieve development priorities. Slide 34 looks at the detail of how we'll do that, and particularly at the bottom, the three strategic areas of quality improvement. And I think that this slide particularly, we have an obligation, moral, but also a strategic obligation to make sure that these things happen. And in our national sector reports, in our annual reports that we're going to be preparing on different aspects of the system, we're going to be reflecting on these goals. How far have we come in terms of teacher supply and provisioning? What are the quality improving strategies that we've used? How far have we come in terms of getting a minimum set of materials and equipment, particularly in those areas, technical subjects, for instance, in those areas where historically our learners haven't been, especially for poorer households, haven't been exposed to or have not taken up as much as we would like. In terms of the coding and robotics curriculum, for instance, what is the progress made in terms of quality, not just in terms of participation, but also in terms of quality improvement and all those aspects of quality improvement. So these goals and will inform those annual sector reports that we have in our action in our annual performance plan. I want to ask honourable members to just hold this particular slide in their memory, if you like, as we look at some of the work that we're going to do around reporting on the national department's leadership of the sector. Slide 35 then just reminds us that these areas really come from the Council of Education Ministers' priorities for this administration and shows clear alignment with the NDP and with the national commitment. The next slide 37, looks at the strategic plan, and it really looks at how over the 5 years we get the outcomes. We would expect to be monitoring the strategic plan maybe once or twice over an election period, whereas the annual performance plan looks at how we're going to do that and key outputs, key delivered outputs every year that we want to achieve. And so they are related, but they're not exactly the same. And so we would be measuring progress in terms of our medium to long-term goals, in terms of the strat plan, and in terms of the annual performance plan, we'll be looking at that annually, looking at program progress, activities, and the details. So the strategic plan is as it was tabled last year. The only thing that has changed in terms of outcome one, relating to healthy basic education system governance, assessment, and curriculum, is just the baseline for enrollment or grade in educational institutions by 2024. All the other targets, indicators have remained the same. Similarly, slide 39, we're aware that some of these targets are stretch targets in terms of the national development plan, but we are also working very hard towards achieving those. So that slide 39 is as it was tabled last year. Slide 40, the only difference here is about in terms of specifying the timeline for systemic evaluation for the grade 6, grade 9 assessment. Next slide, please. By which we will assess how our learners are progressing. And similarly, on slide 41, it's looking at the grade 6 literacy expectations. education really to be conducted in October 2021. And really, most of these timelines had to be reassessed because of the preparation that we expected to do last year, the item development, the work around preparing the system for the assessment, and therefore we have a better sense, line of view, of how we're going to do it, especially in the light of the pandemic. Next slide, please. I think slide 43 we had already presented, and slide 44 already presented in terms of conducting strategic interventions around district director engagement, around mediation, to make sure that when we talk about an evidence-based policy, the framework for education, people are being capacitated in those areas. So the overview of the CSS reviewed in the last month, led by the Presidency and the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and slide 45 just looks at the detail of those reviews. With us, the review has come up with those times that I mentioned in relation to some of our targets that we had expected for 2021, but also some of the areas of work around assessment, curriculum preparation, etc. Next slide, please. Next slide, I think I've covered this. Oh, sorry, can I just keep on the last slide? Sorry, let's go back to that slide. So in terms of, there are five impacts, as I mentioned earlier. Impact 4 and 5 have included programs to train and employ youth. This is over and above the Basic Education and Employment Initiative work, but this is really about getting the skills and to assist with infrastructure maintenance in our schools and across our district, all districts. So we've introduced a target program and indicator for that. Similarly, being very clear about percentage of schools of skills implementing technical occupational curriculum with measurable targets in the strategic plan. We've also revised to focus on the quality of teaching through the provision of appropriate infrastructure, one of our impact areas. So just focusing really on the things that have to happen. In relation to the annual performance plan development we had, the next few slides look the inputs had from the National Treasury, from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, from the AGSA, and also internally in our discussions with the provinces in relation to what they will do in their plan and how they will then contribute to the sector priorities. So the next two or three slides just look at the detail of how we did it, what kinds of inputs we got, what kind of quality assurance we had in terms of editing. We had to update very quickly due to the NTSF revisions, which were included at the end of February, as well as all the other work related to tabling, which we did on the 12th, which we did earlier this week. So the plan is divided into four parts. We have all the different programs, I'm going to take it through, straight through to the program one. We've got five programs. As on the slide, in this year we have 70 indicators. And you can see how they are split. So 70 indicators, 58 of those are annual targets. 58 of those indicators have annual targets. And the balance have a quarterly target for 14% of the rest. And one biannual. One target every 3 years and one target that is biennial, which is twice a year. Biennial every 3 years, biannual twice a year. Sorry. Next slide, please. So there's a few new indicators in relation to ICT procurement, monitoring, and distribution, and we have those indicators on slide 53. We also have indicators relating to just highlighting the gender-based violence awareness, advocacy, but also how we can equip our learners to oppose this scourge in society. So we have specific targets around that. And slide 54 also. I mean, then so those are the indicators, new indicators in one, and we have issues relating to invoices paid, misconduct cases resolved, capacity building, net collectors, as well as issues, just the compliance issues relating to our submissions, quarterly and annual submissions. We have in program two, we look at the technical schools monitored for implementation of CAP for a number of learners obtaining subject passes through the second chance program. And then we have specific indicators relating to the number of children and learners with profound intellectual disability using a particular learning program for this curriculum. Next slide, please. For CS, in terms of the national report on the monitoring of the implementation of CS, it will be the national report on the implementation, but also national report on implementation, quality improving aspects of implementation, on the monitoring, on the findings, but also on feedback and subsequent action. So it won't just be a report on how many we did and how many we covered, but what happened as a result. So it will include elements of follow-up in the report. Next slide, please. We also have reports on how the ECD migration, the detail of the ECD migration, the regulation of the new ECD landscape. Next slide, please. And also then the issues of management information systems and the planning framework for the planning foundation for the new system that includes ECD centers, human resource development plan, and we'll be developing several reports on progress with this area. These reports will be in publicly accessible format, not just technical reports, and they will really be looking at all the different aspects of, for instance, with the EMIS, the data, the infrastructure, the quality of the data, the quality of the information that we're getting, and the utility of that information. So the program managers will be looking at the qualitative aspects, not just quantity. They're not just providing a national report. Similar to the NSC report, the report on the matric exams, we look at all aspects of the matric exams, from the administration to the quality, to the item development, to right through to quality assurance, benchmarking, and reporting. We look at all those issues, and we report on those issues. We don't just report on how many passed and how many didn't do well, or in which subjects, etc. So the program managers within this program will be looking at the detail of exactly what should be in a report on ECD, human resource development, for instance, and what does that mean in terms of what we want, how we want to account publicly to Parliament, but also to the public about what is happening with resources, which are very scarce in this environment. Next slide, please. We will also be looking at district monitoring on the implementation of NCS for grades, for grades 10 to 12, and monitoring of extra support classes to support matric, high-level matric passes. Next slide, please. But also looking at how we're implementing compulsory entrepreneurship in education. This is the department, national department's agenda, but it's also complemented by what the nine provinces will do. So it's not just 125 that will be done in the country, but also what provinces are doing to make sure that this happens. So we would be expecting a lot more impact in terms of the monitoring and feedback in relation to this area. We will also be looking at the general education certificates and report on the implementation, evaluate the progress made, and then use that again in future reports to improve on implementation. Next slide, please. So we're going to be looking also at mentioned piloting for what that's included on the slide on how many schools for the 3 years. Next slide, please. Implementation, and then a lot of monitoring of curriculum standards, of curriculum and policy, in terms of reading norms, incremental introduction of African languages, early grade reading assessment use, multi-grade toolkits that are being used, amongst other, the national reading plan, as well as the availability on the next slide of readers in different schools. So really, what's happening, we're going to be doing a lot of monitoring work ourselves, but we're also going to be, through provinces, able to account for the totality of monitoring, the totality of implementation, the totality of that work that's being done with provinces, led by the National Department in these annual sector reports. Next slide, please. We're also going to be looking at the ICT monitoring of the utilization of information, ICT resources, the provision of workbooks for the home languages and math, but also for grade R, particularly provision of workbooks for that. We're looking also at the textbook provision in key grades, grade 3, 6, 9, and 12, across those 3 years for the whole sector. Then looking at lesson plans, particularly for foundation phase, the home language, special schools with access to electronic devices. I think that's something that has been that's very successful. And that feeds into the ICT strategy that the department is working on. And as I mentioned in the next slide, then the monitoring and procurement and distribution of ICT devices by province, that will be providing annual reports on this. Also, annual sector reports produced on the number of teachers trained on inclusion, like this, as well as governing bodies that are in train, that reach schools that produce the minimum set of management documents, as well as Pumza Lushaka bursaries, as I mentioned earlier, awarded. So all these things really look at providing supports and providing functional schools within the sector. We will also be looking at, in slide 72, quarterly monitoring reports to track the percentage of Pumza graduates placed within 6 months. We'll be doing that for each province and aggregating that and providing that information quarterly. Teacher provisioning in relation to teaching posts that are filled. We have also the next indicator that looks at qualified teachers who are age 30 and below entering the public service. And we're going to be looking at not just the numbers, but also what the dynamics are, what they're qualifying in, what they're doing, what they end up doing, who comes in, who comes out, etc. So that's very, very useful information that will be, over the years, improving the quality and grain of those reports. Then on the Teacher Development Institute, what's happening in the Teacher Development Institute, what kinds of evidence-based approaches are they using, how are they working, not just the numbers, not just the numbers of people who are touched, but also how that functionality is helping to strengthen what is taught within the sector. So we'll be looking at what other, in those reports, what other countries are doing, but also then how that, what research and what evidence there is for this district and development institutes and district teachers development centers contribute to the sector in terms of policy. Slide 75 looks at the monitoring of teacher development programs provided by provincial departments with a special focus on EFAL, math, physical science and accounting, the critical subjects, and obviously then wanting to expand that later on and to use that learning in later work. Post-provisioning with our practitioners with at least an NQF level 6 and above qualification, that is an ongoing, a very important set of indicators, and will continue to provide information to account for our performance in relation to that work with indicators. Slide 77, performance management system for school-based educators, as well as the implementation of the PMDS. We're going to be monitoring, as we have in the past, monitoring provincial departments who implement these, and we'll be doing those 9 monitoring exercises every year for the 3 years in TEF. Slide 78 looks at the number. detention facilities and provided with water site facilities through ACD, and we have written them to target there over the 3 years and over 2 years and water facilities. Provinces will take over some of the responsibilities, the expectation, that's the one, but also secondly because there won't be any more to be provided for in terms of just the numbers have dwindled in relation to the demand. Slide 79 speaks to, let me go back to the infrastructure issue. It doesn't necessarily mean that there will not be any work around provision, but a lot of the work around provision, especially of infrastructure, will be about maintenance of repair, if you like. And that, again, brings in some of the work that we're going to be doing in building capacity to maintain that district closer to the schools. Next slide, please. 29 looks at the mechanics of developing assessments, the different assessments that we'll be doing in terms of the national assessment framework. And slide 79 looks at something that we've always done, which is to provide, to produce annual reports on the NSC. We produce 4 every year and we'll be continuing to do those. We've increasingly improved levels of depth and focus on qualitative aspects of the metric. We will also, in the 2021 to 2023 period, question paper set for the examination, the administration of the use of the South African School Administration SASAN for reporting by school, and also the implementation of the Learner Unit Report Information and Tracking System. It's something that LURIS is a very large system. It's not, we haven't basically used it as well as we could for capacity and other reasons, but it's very important, especially as we go forward to in how we assess learning loss, but also how we assess other things, efficiency of the system, how people go through the system, especially now that we've lost so much learning time. Very critical that we have capacity to do analysis and capacity to use the learning to inform policy as we go forward. Slide 81 looks at the national assessment framework and just progress on this national assessment framework. We've committed to having a national assessment framework. We've committed to having assessments that are both summative but also formative. We've committed to strengthening the school-based assessment system, and this really will be looking at how does this assessment framework within the country for us to report and improve. Tied to that, looking at the school readiness assessment system and progress with the early learning national assessment, we're also looking at program 4, we're also looking at the number of district officials in underperforming districts and schools participating in the mentoring program to strengthen their management skills, but also to strengthen their leadership in the curriculum. Next slide, please. Then, really just focusing on the fact that the districts are a really important middle layer, if you like, between schools and provinces. We're looking at how school principals rate support services in the district, and we do that every other year. We'll be doing that, the rating, every other year. So we have targets in the first year, 0, because we'll be doing preparation work, and then we'll do the assessment, a rating in 2022, and then feed into the system for improvement, and then do that every other year. We will be looking at the district directors who have undergone competency assessment prior to their appointment, and looking at 96 targets of 96% almost to 98%, almost 100%. Underperforming schools monitored at least twice a year. These are underperforming schools which will obviously have an academic improvement plan, as in the legislation. We're looking at monitoring those at least twice a year by district officials, and we will be then monitoring how they do. And the aim is to monitor 80 and 90% over 3 years, in addition to what provinces do. District Director for Health, we're going to have 3 every year at least. So I think in some years, obviously, especially in the current year, probably having more because of the nature of the pandemic. And also we are going to be looking at number of districts where teacher development has been conducted as per district improvement plan from 60 to 65. So we'll be looking at the district improvement plan and looking at with the provinces, obviously, and we'll be looking at how those have informed teacher development and teacher strengths and teacher skills development and strengths. To next slide, please. We come to program 5, which really looks at issues of health, social cohesion, and safety, and nutrition, sexual and reproductive health, gender-based violence. So looking at provinces with approved business plans for the skills HIV and AIDS life skills education program, the national school safety framework monitoring, as well as social cohesion and enrichment program, really districts that are monitored for the implementation of those programs, and then participation of our learners, educators, parents, community members, and education stakeholders in social cohesion programs, rising from 3,000 to 4,000. This year we exceeded our targets because we were able to do most of those electronically, and we had overwhelming support and overwhelming participation, especially during the period, the last few months, and we anticipate that if we do it again next year, we might probably exceed these targets. But we do not require, we do not rely on face-to-face logistics. And then finally, the number of districts implementing programs to end school-related gender-based violence in school assemblies, we're looking at 75 districts. So I think that really summarizes the annual performance plan. The next few slides just look at really the detail of the concerns that the honourable members have had over the last few years in relation to just how provincial alignment works in terms of the constitutional arrangement. The national department has an obligation to assist programs to align provinces to align their programs, and the next two or three slides look at the work that's been done around that. In terms of provinces, we have currently 7 provinces which have adopted the sector standardized indicators. They're called standardized output indicators, and some of the work around over the last 3-4 years now, but particularly in the current year, just looks at the process. We have 7 provinces which have formally adopted the standardized indicators, which basically reflect spectral priorities, and the 2 outstanding provinces, there's a letter that gone out from DG to the provinces to ask them to submit formal adoption letters. Mpumalanga has committed to do that, and Western Cape has raised additional issues as in previous years. So the whole sector is working towards the standardized indicator. The HEDCOM has appointed a head of department of Free State to, and he continues to do that. They're included here for completion. I'm not going to go through them. Then the other slides look at comments from oversight structures about our ACP in there. They're for detail because the honorable members have mentioned those in the past, and we just include them really to provide assurance that these areas have all been dealt with in the annual performance plan, ranging from areas, strategic areas, collaboration and implementation of key parts of the government commitments on gender, on inclusion, on the national youth policy. Some other areas have highlighted where we need a focal point for issues of, for instance, gender responsive reporting within the department, and we're looking at a committee to bring those together. we're also looking at other areas of work where we know that we need to be reporting in the future. Some of the comments looked at more operational issues, how particular provinces do certain things, and we do not feel that it is, in terms of the constitutional arrangement, we cannot put in our APP as the department, national department, issues that pertain to provinces. Those issues belong to the provincial APP. I'm going to just stop there on slide 96 and just hand over to CFO for the budget review part of it. Thank you so much.
Good morning, members of parliament, as well as the minister, the DG and colleagues. Carol, can you just unshare so that I can present from this side?
Sorry, thank you.
I hope that the presentation is on the screen. I'm going to talk to the budget review for the Department of Education. The allocation year starting the next financial year starting in April, start on that page, on that slide. At the top, on this slide, I'll only talk to the top figures for 2021-22. Initial budget was 27.3 billion, 28.5 billion, and 29.7 billion for 2022-23 and 2023-24, respectively. Then there were budget cuts, as they are indicated below the top figure. Then on the next page, the budget cuts continue, but the most important figure is the bottom one. The budget cuts resulted in the final budget for 2021-22 being 27 billion, 28.1 billion and 28.8 billion for 2022-23 and 2023-24 respectively. What it basically means if one compares next year, which is 2021-22, with the current financial year that we are ending now at the end of March, there has been an increase in the budget from 23.395 billion to 27 billion, which is an increase of 15% or an increase of 3.6 billion. Then if you go to the next slide, this slide just shows the net budget, which is the bottom figure, after we take out compensation of employees. On the next slide, we're showing the budget per program. I want to go through each item on this slide, but I'll go through the following slide, which explains merely the difference between the current year and the next year. Safe to just indicate that at the bottom of the slide, we're showing the total figure, but one can see that the increases are sort of minuscule from year to year. And actually, they're just minuscule. From 2021-22 to 2022-23, between the current year and the year that's starting in April. As I indicated previously, there's a variance, there's an increase of 3.6 billion. And that increase, if we go to programs on admin, there's an increase of 12 million, which is 2%. And on curriculum, which is program 2, there's an increase of 190 million, which is 10%. On program 3, there's an increase of 32 million, which is 2%. On program 4, there's an increase of 2.8 billion, which is 25%. And on program 5, there's an increase of 510 million, which is 6%. So if we go through economic classification, it's basically the same information that we showed in the overall MTEF, except that this one is per economic classification, whereas the other was per program. I'll also indicate per economic classification where the variances are in this slide, whereas we've shown already in the previous slide that there's an increase of 3.6 billion. But if we analyze the increase per economic classification, for compensation of employees, there's a reduction of 9.8 million, which is 16.7%. For goods and services, there's an increase of 322 million, which is 18.3%. For interest on rent and land, there's a reduction of 2.9 million, which is 7.1%. For transfers, there's an increase of 3.5 billion, which is 18.7%. And for payments of capital assets, there's a reduction of 195 million, which signifies 8.6%. We further analyzing the budget earmarked allocations. Similarly to the other slides, I'll just go to the slide that shows, or before I even go there, the increases for earmarked funds at the bottom there, the total increase is also minimal. In the first year, in 2021-22, the increase is about 12 million. Whereas in the following year, the increase goes to 4 million, meaning the 56 minus the 52. But then if we analyze where what increased or reduced year on year from the current financial year to next year, starting April, for work books, there's an increase of 77 million, which signifies 6.8%. Matric second chance is 21 million, which signifies 57%. And oversight is 76,000, which is a 0% increase. Learners with profound intellectual disabilities grant, or increase of 36,000, which is 1%. Examiners and moderators, an increase of 11 million. Which is 27%, and NSMP reduced by 1.7 million, which is 8%. For the rest, the previous slide was dealing mainly with the support that we give, monitoring that we give at provinces. This slide deals more with the main conditional grants. And for learners with profound intellectual disabilities, in the next slide we're analyzing the increases. Before we do that, I want to also go to the bottom figure to just show that the increases are taking the same pattern of being very minimal from 2021-22 to 2022-23, the increase is about 1 billion. In the following year, the increase is also about 1 billion. 79 million, which is 24%. For EIG, Education Infrastructure Grant, there's an increase of 1%. For HIV and AIDS grant, 4.8 million, 55 million roughly, which is 29%. And for NSNP, there's an increase of 449 million, which is 5.8%. Then we analyze further per transfers that you make to other entities. Even those increases, if you look at the bottom, for the first year versus the second year, there's an increase of about 6 million. And then for the outer year, the increase goes down to just 1 million. And then if we analyze where the increases are, under UNESCO, the increase is 226,000, which is 1.3%. On ADIA, the increase is 2,000, which is 1.3%. Guidance and counseling and youth development, 3,000, which is 1.5%. Sideline, South Africa, 5,000 difference or increase, which is 6.8%. NECT, an increase of 1.8 million, which is 15.7%. Southern and Eastern Africa, SACMET, an increase of 49,000, which is 1.3%. NSFAS, an increase of 60 million, which is 1.2%. UMALUSI, an increase of 1 million, which is a 0% basically. ETDPC, an increase of 6,000, which is 1.3%. And FAZE, an increase of 5 million, which is a 39.7% increase. On the next slide, we're showing a summary of some sort, because some of the items we've seen in the previous slides. And then if I go to the next slide to analyze these differences, the slide that for compensation of employees is an increase of 30 million, which signifies an increase of 6% or decrease basically. Sorry about that. As I said previously, the compensation of employees has decreased. On goods and services, there's an increase of 7 million, which is 4.8%, and school infrastructure has decreased by 131 million, which is 5.4%. Office accommodation has increased by 2.2%, which is 4.9 million. Departmental projects have increased by 113 million, which is 86%. Earmarked funds have increased by 152 million, which is 12.8%. Transfers have increased by 21 million, which is 1.3%. And conditional grants, as we saw in the previous slide, has increased by 3.4 million, which is 20.2%. This slide basically, it's the last but one slide, shows the Rural Education Assistance Project, which will end next year, as well as the systemic improvement of language and numeracy in foundation phase, which will also end next year. But just for members' interest, as we close in these two projects, in the current financial year, RIP, or Rural Education Assistance Project, had a budget of 29 million, and in the budget of 16.5 billion. In the following year, it goes down by 99% to 16.2 million. And I think it's mainly because the project is being closed. So that variance of 16.5 billion represents a 99% reduction. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DJ. Over to you.
Yes, I do. I thought that the DJ was gonna speak. But
No, Chair, there's nothing to add. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. No, it's fine then. Members, that's APP of DBE 2021-2022 and the ASTRAC plan for the next 3 years. Can I note hands? There's only one hand from Honorable Sukar. Okay, and the Honorable Siwela. Can I allow you in that order to speak, Honorable Sukar?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to everyone, and thank you to the department for the presentation. My apologies to the meeting. I am just running between two committees at the moment. Chair, in terms of my comments, the first thing is in appreciating the presentation. I just need to ask, Chair, if reports of the nature that we have received, if we can please in future receive them well in advance. Given the pressure, for instance, on someone like myself, it would be much better for committee members to work through what the department is presenting if we get it well in advance. This one we received on Monday, and we're dealing with a very big department in terms of the amount of funds that are going into it and in terms of the crisis that we're in our country with COVID-19. So I think if the department can please just make a note of that. So I would like to ask, Chair, in light of that, if the DG would give us written answers to questions that we would send him and respond to our comments and be available for any follow-up. Given the comment that I just made. I've just got two questions. The committee, the ministry and the DBE face a fundamental problem and we need to provide quality education, but the fiscus cannot give more money. And I've made this comment before, so I am again asking challenges. It has to innovate. So I learned on delivering teaching during COVID to innovate. The DG previously has indicated that, yes, the department has an appetite for change and innovation. And if the DG today can just elaborate on those and what those are, what strategies is the department employing to address the fatigue in the workforce in order to support teacher well-being and efficiency? There is a concern around I'm losing more teachers, especially teachers within the subjects that is most critical to the economy. So those are my questions, Chairperson.
Honorable Suela.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all colleagues. Firstly, I just want to appreciate the presentation of the APP, and also appreciate the fact that although it was probably done in a very short space of time because of the changing environment, it appears a well thought through APP, and that we should have to monitor its implementation and ensure that whatever is presented here is monitored and the department is able to deliver. The question that I have, though, is that in the light of the dwindling financial resources, although the DG earlier indicated it does show some increase, which unfortunately is not enough. Given the fact that the projected budget for the department is going to decline in the next few years, what has the department done or is doing to ensure that the declining resources do not impact negatively on its functioning? Thank you, Chair.
Okay,
Faiza, but it's on the vault now.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. Thanks for the presentation. I just want to, the previous colleague also raised the issue that is of concern is, I mean, we are in COVID, there's a lot of rumours from my medical people that we come to the centre. So how would the current economics influence our budget? Because I see there's still some last CD projects on, etc. And in a written reply this week from the Minister's office, I see there are about 1,935 projects, including new and replacement upgrades, additions, rehabilitation, refurbishment, repairs, renovations, and maintenance. Now, I'm assuming that with the that these projects are included in the budget, because it's not really specified for a member to easily find these projects in the overall budget. So if we can just know that when we speak about infrastructure, for example, that these projects are included. By the way, the DG can maybe just check on that question 754. I think the adding up of projects is wrong, but that's not the crisis for now. The crisis is, are these projects included in the 21-22 infrastructure budget? Thank you, Chair.
Mama Sabella?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for understanding, for rectifying your mistake for yesterday. And good morning to everyone. Morning, Minister of Basic Education. I've got only two issues here, Chair. The 2030 DBE priorities do not seem to prioritize anyway the development of online learning, particularly in the context of COVID-19. Does the department have such plans? And the second issue here, on the recommendation in relation to schooling and the pandemic, is that schools should remain open as far as possible with the precautionary mechanism in place. The justification for this is the implementation of school feeding program and that children are substantially at a lower risk to COVID-19 than adults. The question is, Chairperson, what measures are then put in place for teachers who may be substantially at risk of contracting the virus?
Well, thank you very much, Mama Samela. I don't see any other hand on the platform.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister, the DG, and all the Honorable Members in the meeting. Chair, let me also appreciate and note the reports and presentations that we received on the APPs of the department and their strategic plans. I don't have much questions to ask, but mine is on the issue of the budget visitors need their objectives. Whether how does it affect what is the implication actually of this budget in the 2021 current year? Whether is it going to improve in the department to reach their objectives? How is it affecting the work that they're supposed to do? But also on the issue of the compensation of employees, I see that there is a great improvement or increase. When I recall, we had meetings with unions and SGP as our stakeholders. There was a great concern on the vacant posts in all through the provinces that needs to be filled, and that are also impacting based on the development of our children. How best the department is going to make sure that they try to mitigate and resolve that matter, because we know during the COVID-19 last year, many educators lost their lives. So it means there are many vacant posts that are filled. And how soon are they going to make sure? Rather than that, I think I'm covered, and I really appreciate the good work that has been done by the department so far. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thank you very much for the input, honourable members. Yes?
Chairperson Llewellyn, honourable Lehihi is having some connectivity problems. She has two questions, if you would allow me just to read it out, Chairperson.
Okay.
From Honourable Lehihi, has the department done any feasible study into the human resource capacity and structural support in terms of taking ECD back into the department? And secondly, is there a plan to develop the current ECD centres, or learners will be moved to the already overcrowded schools? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Llewellyn. That's the question from Lehihi. The issue that I want to raise is that probably, yes, we are welcoming the plans of the department and understanding the issue of budget constraints as well. And of course, we will be doing oversight and on these plans that you have outlined. But one thing that, for interest's sake, that I must raise is that on the developments that are happening, and I know that is not your baby, the issues of higher education, but the developments that are happening in our country now of the registration, which actually it's annual, it's something that happens every year. But I think as a country, we are not able to deal with this problem of registration. And I don't know how one should rephrase it, but you know, these kids are your kids. They move from you to higher education. And I think you must also somehow play a role in terms of assisting. Because I think really we need to put our heads together. This can happen.
it can happen year in, year out. We've got a problem of registration. We've got a problem of kids that must protest, and that should delay academic, and we to attend to this problem. So as these are your kids moving to another phase of life, I think somehow basic education must also play a role in terms of assisting in this matter. And then the second issue that I want to raise, which Honorable Van der Walt raised as well, is the issue of COVID. We are told that we might have a third wave around late April to May. And the reality, at a personal level, and I'm raising it now, changing a cap, but being a parent, and I know the minister has alluded to this. You know, our kids are alternating now, going to school, which of course we accept because we understand in the situation. But the reality, I don't know whether it's my child. I am realizing that she's getting slower. She's getting slower, and the reality as well is that she is not. She's not really regarding me as a teacher, and I'm not a teacher to her. Like now, I'm in a meeting. I ask her to do a homework. So when I go to the room, she's not there anymore. So she went to play outside. The books are open there alone. You know. So the situations that the parents are dealing with, and it looks like we are not or we are not going to get through this problem anytime soon. But one thought I must just raise is, you know, it is a frustration, and you can imagine at least I've got some level of understanding. I can be able to assist the child. But there are parents who are not in that situation, like myself as well. But also, how can we plan that we've seen, we've lost close to 500 teachers last year due to COVID-19. What are your plans now for this year? How do we minimize the number if we are really going to be confronted by third wave towards the winter? How do we minimize the number? How do we make sure that we put our teachers as well? Because in my view, teachers are supposed to be, that is a priority to get. So it should be DPE, in my view as well, that tries to fast-track such a situation where teachers must be able to be vaccinated so that we minimize the number. Because we know one thing as well, we take time to fill those vacancies. And just for interest sake, the robotics, which is going to start this year, can we just be informed which provinces are you planning to start at, and why those provinces you would be starting us to implement the robotics program. So those are the issues that I think from my side I am raising with the department. I am just to respond. I think you were not Honorable Sukher, just to respond to yourself. I think you were not there when we started because of you are in two meetings. We apologize for the late arrival of the presentation. It is not really the department's fault, but we squeezed in this meeting because we avoided not to have a meeting today. So can I allow you then, Minister, to lead the responses?
No, thank you, Chair. DG and the colleagues will fill in the areas that are left off what I would have left out. But just a few matters. You remember when we were speaking about the election, we had said, because it's a very involved area, we would like to take members of parliament through the different issues. For instance, there is no way we can take two-year-olds to schools. It does not work ever. Even in schools, your grade R and grade R1 and R2, we put them away from the bigger kids so that they are not run over and other things, but to even go below R2 as a school in a school environment, it's not going to happen. But in terms also of upgrading facilities, we, using the social development framework, it's clear that, I mean, if you you're running your center in a very unsafe shack, it will be very dangerous for government to even recognize and register because they'll be liable. So there are quite a number of things that we've been discussing of what may not happen in terms of any other person when it comes to DBE, because the goal is to really enable the majority of children who are outside the net to come into the net. Our information chair tells us that even with registered with parents paying, more than 80% of South African children are outside the net of ECDs. And we're saying that's one of the most important periods in a person's life because that's the formation period. So the whole idea, amongst others, is to increase access, but to also make sure that the programs are structured, the curriculum, the training, the systems, and we're going to be working with social development, but some of the expectations that all we do, maybe we have a bigger money, we're going to expand things in terms of expectations of people may not be realistic. I thought I should raise this. The other point I also raised when you started was that this period has really helped us to learn quite a number of things and also helped to demystify some of the thoughts that we had about education. And ICTs is one of them. You know, Chair, it has really taught us to be very innovative. Let me say the sector. Most of these township schools, because they didn't have access to gadgets, the things that they were using were quite exciting. They were using WhatsApp groups. They were using different things. And if you look deep into the results, you will find that actually it confirms the fact that you can't replace the teacher, the point that you are making. That the schools that pushed hard for extra classes, morning classes, where there was interaction amongst learners themselves, was interaction, just that human touch, performed better than children who were on the virtual platform. But the things that we are raising here are real. All of us would have experienced. I have foster children that I'm staying with. You become a manjingi learner. You have to. They close doors, they close the screens of the teacher. And teachers are complaining, I mean, at the school where this other foster kid of mine goes to, they have said, it's either you remove your child from our schools, we're no longer offering virtual, or you go and find them a place because it's not working. Even as parents, they're writing projects for them, they're getting 100% when they come and write tests at school. It's not worked well, so it's helping us even to understand better that which would have been planning around the rollout of ICTs to say, it confirms the point that ICTs have to support teachers, but they can't be replacements. During coronavirus, when private schools were going on virtual learning, it was like, come here, you're going to have it. But it has confirmed that, no, the teacher and the school and the classroom still remain central, not only even for your vaccinations, for your food, but also the social environment that the school provides, where teachers can have eye contact with children, children can be able to compete amongst each other, can learn from each other, but can socialize and be in a more safer space, enhances their performance. So it has also, as I say, helped us demystify some of the thoughts that we might have had around the rollout of ICT. I constantly get reports from principals who are not even in our public schools, who are in private schools, updating us about the challenges of virtual teaching. Teacher fatigue is one of the big problems because teachers have to prepare for your virtual but also have to prepare for your face-to-face. And they say it kills teachers. They find it very difficult to cope. but they are saying it's also not very effective. Even the platforms that we have, the current platforms we have, your Teams and other things, those were platforms which were made for business, not for teaching. So we don't even have appropriate platforms for teaching. What we were using in the meantime, we just stopped gaps that would help us interact and close gaps. But there's lots of innovation that we've learned. We've learned also on things that work. I mean, when we looked at the programs, I think under desperate times, we also learned to innovate for survival. When we did the water metric program and bringing business, bring the expertise, it really for the first time enabled us to marshal resources, both human, physical, and testing that may work. And that water metric program, because of the very positive response that we got from it, we have spoken to our partners who have helped us with that, your Egypt, NECT, and the business partners, that we want to really cascade it down to other grades, which will accommodate also some of the threats that are going to come in terms of your third wave and other ways, so that we are going to build on that which we accidentally innovated during the first wave. And as such, even in the third wave, and we'll continue to build on it because we found a very helpful innovation. The other one I really want to... let me not take much of the time in terms of even teacher supply to say we a position check where people produce quite a number of young teachers who have qualified from universities that are available for post. Even up to now as a sector, we're not able to absorb all of them. And our experience and our monitoring has revealed that they are such a big asset in the school. They are young, they are energetic, they may not be highly experienced compared to your old teachers, but they, in terms of content, because they're university graduates, they are better off in many other ways. And when they interact with the old teachers, it really helps the old teachers, help them with sharing experiences of teaching, but on the other hand, they have very good content. It's a very good mix for us. And I would say we've not as yet reached the crisis. The difficulties are with the finances. And maybe Didi will speak about it. That we've had to postpone some of the programs, especially infrastructure, but have also tried to make sure that your key infrastructure or urgent infrastructure like water and sanitation is not compromised. But leave it to the DG to answer specific questions. The ones I really got excited about was around innovation and how this period has helped us to be innovative, to learn more, and also to demystify some of the things that we thought would work in the sector. And because we were forced to test them under duress, we found that in any case they would not have worked as well as we had thought would work, around, especially around the rollout of ICTs.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. Well, Chair, you've addressed the issue of receiving the report on time. We've tried to make sure that the reports are at least received a week before the meeting. We'll keep to that and enhance that. I don't want to explain what happened. I think you did deal with this matter at the beginning of the meeting. Well, we will be waiting for the questions that Honorable Sukers raised to respond to them in writing as you requested. We'll do so, most definitely. Lessons learned from COVID-19, the Minister is giving a number of them. I want to add to the basket that the Minister is our ability to work with our brothers and sisters in the region and the continent. Chair, you'll appreciate that when we started, to prepare
on track after the 26th of March. We mainly worked with countries overseas, and the rationale for that was that those countries had gone through COVID-19. We couldn't work with countries in Africa in the region, because all of us were watching on what was happening overseas. But now that we have gone through COVID-19, we are meeting with countries in the region and in the continent. We've already met with Namibia, we've met with Zimbabwe, we've met with Rwanda, we've met with Kenya, and there are others like Nigeria that are still coming that we'll be meeting with. And we are learning from each other. And we learn a lot, even how to navigate our way through the pandemic, because it's likely to be with us for quite some time. The issues that the minister touched, using WhatsApp as a very cost-effective measure to communicate with learners, although we know that although access nationwide is around 80% and 90% of smartphones, it does not necessarily mean that that represents the penetration within your learner bodies in our schools. But teachers used WhatsApp a lot, and when we interacted with learners checking their state of readiness, especially in grade 12 last year, they told us that teachers kept in contact with them through WhatsApp over and above the classroom when the time and the environment allow that to happen. Strategies to address fatigue. What we are doing is to use our EATs at provincial and district level, and unions have also indicated that through their programs that we are working together with them, they are addressing issues of motivation and issues of fatigue. But I must honestly admit that we don't really have a silver bullet for this one. It's essentially based on as people present their needs and the EAP sections at district and provincial level. Honorable Siwela and you, monitoring will have to be stringent because we've just presented plans to you. As I speak, I'm in the Eastern Cape in Matatiele as part of the monitoring and dealing with sanitation and water projects. And I fully agree with you, and the minister and deputy minister have also been going out to provinces, going out to communities to monitor, including other line functions in the department. They have also been going out to monitor. So monitoring will become quite crucial, because what will make things to happen is in monitoring. I will come back to the issue that relates to the implications of the budget and combine it with what honorable members have asked about so that I respond to it at once. Honorable van der Walt, the current economic situation, how it's influencing the budget and the operations of the department. Indeed it does. We are in a very difficult fiscal space. And I must just caution, as you might appreciate the increase from year to year, if you take a longitudinal view and analyze the allocation over the MTEF and even look back, you'll realize that, in fact, there's no real increase in the budget. But Mr. Kuno also tried to demonstrate by showing where you have an increase and showing where you have a decrease. There are bigger percentages where there is a decrease than where there is an increase. That talks to the current fiscal situation of fiscal space that we find ourselves in. We've learned to stretch the rent or the value of the currency that we have to be able to do things that are very key to running the department, such as supporting learners, learner support programs, implementing the curriculum, providing basic services such as water and sanitation. So we plan to really stretch the budget on these things in order to survive. I will look at the question that you referred to, Honorable Van der Waal. I think you said it's 5 or 7. So we'll look at it with Mr. Mahara and liaise with you to check what you are not happy about in the response to that question. And Honorable Anthony, the Minister has dealt with this matter quite adequately. But even before COVID-19, the Minister would remember that at some point when we went to countries like Italy, which are first world countries, we realized that the use of tablets, laptops, and smartphones does not necessarily replace the face-to-face teaching in the classroom. There are very few learners who would be able to do very well or exceptionally well, especially in your lower grades. Maybe from grade 10, 11, and 12, you can increase the dependency on online learning, but lower grades, they really require, I mean, all countries that we interacted with in the continent and outside clearly indicated that online learning doesn't work for younger children in lower grades. They need face-to-face learning. Of course, it provides information to be available to learners. It makes an excellent teacher to excel even more, but it does not necessarily replace the teacher in the classroom. But indeed, there is, provinces have set aside budgets, including Limpopo, by the way, Honorable Machabela. The MEC indicated in the last Council of Education Ministers that she's now been given a budget to be able to provide devices to learners in Limpopo. So Limpopo will come on board. In the Eastern Cape, the first phase was to provide all teachers, all school principals with laptops. And then the next phase was to provide a tablet to learners. So the Eastern Cape had also started that. Provinces are at different levels of making provision for online learning or providing gadgets so that they prepare themselves for that eventuality when it happens, when they have to communicate and continue to provide teaching and learning virtually. The measures that are in place to deal with the teachers who are at risk of contracting the virus, well, all that we do, Mr. Paranki could add if we want to do that, teachers that doctors are saying the virus is secular before, and that's the alert level 1 for the first time. And when we went to alert level 3 in December, we came up with a circular to regulate the environment. And we had agreed with unions that we'll then get back to some discussions with them to look at whether we can bring a resolution similar to the one that we had before. So based on what doctors are advising, in terms of the risk levels of teachers, a consideration is being made that teachers should not be exposed to the virus. But maybe to combine it with the issue raised by the Honorable Chair, I do sit in a structure called NAT Joint of DGs, and the NAT Joint of DGs has got work streams that are generating work in terms of dealing with COVID-19, and which advises the National Coronavirus Command Council. We have already advised NAT Joint and the Department of Health that teachers must form part of the frontline workers who are going to be vaccinated. The Department of Health indicated that the next round of vaccination is going to include teachers, which should be happening in April if all things go according to plan. So we have two COVID-19, advising the Ministry of Health on COVID-19. So they sit in that structure. In that structure, all matters educational, including the issue of vaccination of teachers, was raised at the NAC joint, was also raised at MEC. So the Department of Health has indicated that teachers are going to form part of the next group of frontline workers who will be vaccinated from April. Honorable Adun, well, I have tried in the remarks that I offered before he started with the presentation to reflect a little bit on the implications of the budget with respect to the programs and objectives that you are expected to implement, and objectives that you are expected to realize. That you have become innovative using ICT, for instance, will now take the form of meetings. This time of the year, I would be going out to provinces to have one-on-one meetings. There is one meeting at the moment as we speak with Northern Cape. Everyone is where they are supposed to be in their workplace environment, but one-on-one meetings are happening where we reflect on the performance of last year, analyze the performance of each and every province, come up with strategies to improve this year. It's one of the innovations that came out of COVID-19. We are able to have close to 10 to even 15 meetings a day through virtual means. We are also able to monitor, verify using, different data sets without going face-to-face to go and do monitoring. But with respect to teaching, the minister has covered that, the issue of WhatsApp, and so on and so on. And you would have appreciated, even in terms of the grade 12 results, in fact, the difference between those schools that would have afforded virtual learning through laptops and so on, and those who would have relied on WhatsApp, is very small. The real improvement in the system is brought about by schools that are serving poor communities, learners who do not have these devices that you are talking about. But together with network operators, in the presentation we have referred to all special schools in 2021 being fully connected, and that is done by the network operators such as Vodacom, such as Cell C, such as MTN, etc., etc. We are working with them to do that. We have digitized our content. Almost 90% of our content is digitized and even available. So that's what we are doing, even preparing for the third wave. But I must also indicate that schools, some of the schools even started with, extra tuition even before we formally reopen schools for grade 12 in the Free State in particular, and that is one of the secrets of the Free State to be number one over many years. Many of the schools there, it's something that has been institutionalized. They start school earlier than others, and Saturday weekend classes have even started. They are no longer doing this. And that's why you could see the classroom teaching displayed such level of resilience. It's the institutionalized innovation brought about by teachers and school principals, parents and communities to be able to insulate learners even during difficult times. The issue of vacancies, Honorable Aduns, with provinces, part of the problem around vacancies is the diminishing budgets for personnel. In fact, there is an analysis that was done by Martin Gustafsson, working with a team from National Treasury, showing the link in terms of schools that are struggling to improve, even in international tests, with the number of posts, especially school management team posts, that are built or provided in those schools. The real issue is around the budget. And if you go to provinces like Mpumalanga, it does not only affect schools, yeah, it affects office-based staff as well. Honorable Lihi, well, we have a number of work streams that are part of the process of driving the function shift in terms of ECD, and HR is one of those. As you would have heard from the minister, we are not going to take over a function and lower the provision of the function, but we want to make sure that when the function comes over, the provision is better than it was from the Department of Social Development. That also includes the issue of ECD centers, which the minister eloquently covered in terms of what is the scope of coverage by social development vis-a-vis what we intend to cover as the basic education. Honorable Chair, you've asked a very difficult question of registrations at the HET, at HEIs rather, at HEIs. Well, I do acknowledge that the majority of these learners who come from 80% of schools that are no fee-paying schools, it becomes a shock for them when they go to higher education level, when at school level they've not been paying anything. And by the way, in the past you used to pay for even your certificate, getting your certificate. That no longer happens. A few years ago, the issue of, schools themselves having to pay for certificates, government pay for all certificates for fee-paying and non-fee-paying schools. And I agree with you that it is a challenge. All that it can do is to advise there, I mean, in regular contact with Mr. Ngondep, in terms of how they are dealing with that situation. And I'm sure the minister will do the same to Minister Nzimande. But I do acknowledge that it is a problem. The issue of the alternating days, different timetabling models, the minister has acknowledged that. We do accept that it is a challenge. And now that we have gone to alert adjusted level one, we are starting a discussion with the Ministerial Advisory Committee as well as NetJoint. I've raised the issue with NetJoint last week, in fact the week before last, because we meet every Sunday, that we need to have a discussion to look at the possibility of at least getting all primary schools to be allowed to bring all learners at once, because the science and the evidence is very clear. Learners are much less affected, they are at less risk, especially those that are at primary school compared to those that are at high school level. So we are engaging with the Ministerial Advisory Committee, the NetJoint, and will make a recommendation that should go to the NCCC. A plan to minimize the number of teachers affected through vaccination. Well, I've indicated already that health is saying teachers are going to form part of the next group on that one. Honorable Minister, Honorable Chen, Honorable Members, I've really attempted to respond to the ones that have been able to cover. Maybe colleagues can come in and add where there's a need to do so. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chen, Honorable Members.
Chair, if you don't mind, can I just quickly respond to your point around admissions? I forgot to respond to it, and at least I had a privilege of being in a meeting with higher education and perhaps want to share some information. So can I proceed, Chair?
Yes, you can proceed, ma.
Yeah. Chair, you're quite right that the situation at universities, just nationally, because the risk institutions which are amongst the best in the country. And if you see the occurrences, it really does take a lot from even from their image, from their integrity. To an extent that some affluent families are even beginning to send their kids overseas, which it's not an ideal situation where you want kids in the first degree to be studying outside the country. So it is a bigger problem than just really admissions problems. But we also, through, and I can share this information, that through the cabinet subcommittee had a report and from the Minister of Higher Education, and it might be helpful at some stage to get it shared, maybe bigger or broader than a cabinet, because there are very interesting trends that we need to understand, but also accept that there are challenges. The biggest challenge now is not so much about spaces at universities and admissions. Minister Nzimande was able to demonstrate to us that for the first years, if everything equal, there should be enough spaces for everybody. So the space is not such a big issue. The big issue, indeed, is what the learners are raising, the students are raising, of your historical debt. So not spaces as such. And that historical debt is a big problem. It's a big problem for young people because I know of people who've even had to leave, go and do part-time to come and do, pay historical debt. Just is a problem. Especially the group that was at universities before the decision of no fees at tertiary was pronounced. So that group has a huge historical debt. Some of them can't graduate, some of them can't. So it's a big issue that government has to find a way of dealing with. That historical debt, it's a big burden for the majority of kids. But the other issue around spaces, which Minister Nzimande raised, was the completion rate. You are saying that kids, not in medical schools, who've been at university for 12 years. So the repetition rate is just, the failure rate is just huge. And only 40% of our students who have gone to university graduate. And that's where I think we come in terms of just readiness to take university education. Countries like Zimbabwe have 12 years of schooling. And grade 13, which is the way subjects which they're going to do at universities. And some people are saying it's an international trend, maybe our kids go to university not very ready, and that's where I think we come in. But with the current impasse is around the historical debt. And the historical debt, indeed, is the problem. Higher education says it doesn't have money to pay for it. Universities say they can't sustain that debt further if they're to run its outfit. So I thought I should just say that it's not for me, and from what Minister Nzimande was saying, questions about registration or spaces, but it's a variety of things. It's your completion rate, it's your pass rate, it's your readiness to go to varsity. Some of the, we're told that some of these young, they're still young, they're 17, 18, they're going to a different place. There's no induction, there's no orientation, there's no environment where they have you and me as parents to say, study, go to school and other things. They just can't handle the new environment without adequate support. And those are the things, I think you're correct, that we have to look at in partnership with higher education, because it is threatening the image, the integrity, and the functionality of our institutions of higher learning, and they really are one of the best things that we have in this country, and we can't allow them to go down the drain without really trying to intervene. So I thought I should respond to that chat. Sorry for coming back.
No, thank you very much, Minister. Members, is there any follow-up or a member who feels that is not being responded to? None? Okay. Now, on that note,
then let me say that we are noting the plans of the department, and ours, of course, would be to monitor and play oversight over the Department of Basic Education. I think your plans are in order. The issues of finances are a general national problem, and there is really nothing anyone can do about it. We are wishing you well with your implementation, then Minister DG and your officials. We trust and hope that you will be able to execute through difficult times. And on that note, can the DB releasing you, DBE, to adopt some minutes. We are going to meet in 6 weeks from now. Just to mention that we are working on a plan to have a workshop like we have agreed yesterday on the ECD, on the ECD migration. But of course, our secretariat will communicate when we have, when the House Chair has approved and we have confirmed the date. And just to say, members, we again apologize because we might get into your constituency period. We might just ask 2 or 3 days of it for that workshop. And then I understand you will be at home, you will be on constituencies, but just bear with us. But we will communicate the issue of the dates very early so that everybody can be can plan proper for it. But like we say, it might be during our constituency period. If that is it, May, thank you very much. DBE, you can leave us.
Thank you, teacher.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the committee. Thanks, Chair.
Lorraine, you can bring the minutes. Report, and we adjourned the meeting at 12:48.
on that day, can we get any person that wants to collect the minutes? In the absence of collections, can we adopt the minutes? Honourable members?
Chief, this is right on a vote. I propose we adopt.
Thank you very much. Any second? I second, Chair. Thank you very much. Second, Mrs. Llewellyn. Thank you. We have the meeting on the 3rd of March through a virtual platform, where we had an engagement with the labor union. We had engagement with Pratu Pay when applause are not to end. The OU. Page 1 is the attendance, and page 2 of the officials and the official and the attendance of the labor organization, all of them, and the attendance of the parliamentary staff. Then we attended the meetings and we welcomed everybody that was part of the meeting. And then we allowed the teachers' unions to give us brief presentations and start to PEU and NAPTOSA followed and then NATO followed. And then the OU followed. And those are the issues that were raised by the members as observations. And then we got the responses which they responded on the issues that we have raised. And then we have concluded the meeting, we considered the meeting, and then we also, this report did not do it, okay, we adopted the report and then the meeting adjourned at 12:48, and any corrections on the minutes? In the absence of corrections, can we adopt the minutes, members?
I move Chair to adopt the minutes.
Thank you. Any seconder?
As always, I support.
Thank you very much. The last set of minutes? Then we had a meeting on the 6th of March, 1982, virtual platform, where we had an engagement with the SGB structures. It was FESAS, NASGB, SAPA, GBF, UF for SGB, and SANASE. Page 1 was the attendance of the members who were in the meeting, and then the officials and the governing bodies attendance that we in the meeting, and then the parliamentary staff, and then we opened the meeting, we welcomed everybody, and then we asked the SGB structures to do the presentation, and then FESFAS and NASGB, they had a joint presentation which they have presented, and then we had GBF following SAPA and UF for SGB that followed, and then we had Governors Alliance, and then we had SANASE that followed, and then those were committee observations and then responses from all the SGBs. And then we had concluded the meeting, and then we attended the meeting at 12:47. So, any correction, members? Can we adopt the minutes?
Chairperson?
Yes,
good afternoon. I rise here to propose that this minute be adopted as a true reflection of what transpired on the date in question.
Thank you very much, Ndati Murwakesa. Any seconder? Resuela? we thank you very much for that second band that is coming very thank you very much. Honorable members, let me really thank you very much for your cooperation for this term. We have had very fruitful meetings, I must say, in my views. And together we are stronger, you know, as the committee. Thank you very much for your support and for always being there for the meetings to be able to sit. We really not have problems of meetings not creating as DPE, and it is because of your commitment. So please do enjoy your constituency, stay safe, be at home, go to work, and please have your masks on. The COVID is still there and very viral. Till we meet when we come back in the next term. But on that note, can I request Honorable together with Shell and thank you very much to everybody. Till we meet.
Chairperson.
Yeah, Baba.
The report says the parliament was on fire. This is on a lighter note. Are our OPC safe? Thank you very much. We'll see you when we meet next term. Thank you, otherwise.
Now, on fourth floor, if you are on fourth floor, you have a problem.
I'm the group of people.